Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who's way too obsessed with Arch Manning's panini, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Look, I believe on this show I have actually called myself Panini Poppy.
You have.
And I'm not saying I'm not proud of that. It was typically referring to the hot and pressed sandwich variety, which I understand Arch Manning did not get a $101,000 bid for one of his sandwiches, as I'm understanding Panini to be the trading card variety. But nonetheless, more credit to him. Arch is an 18-year-old who just made $100,000 for his likeness and name and image. So pretty stinking cool, man. Straight from the Panini Poppy. I will bless this as great Longhorn news.
I thought it was the Panini Priest. It felt I remember being clerical, maybe. I'm not sure. It's fine. It doesn't matter.
I actually think you're right. I think that was in my I got ordained phase and performed a wedding. So yes, I was the Panini Priest. I haven't practiced in a while. Shout out if you need officiating services, I am. I believe the only member of this podcast who is ordained by the Universal Life Church. Gerald is actually real life. But anyways, yes, I was the Panini Priest. Now just Panini Poppy, please, to my friends.
Yeah, Panini Poppy. That sounds like if Weird Al did a Drake album, like that would be what it would be called. So we're not here to talk about press sandwiches or Arch Manning auctioning off a signed card for charity. We're here to talk about the defensive line. So we're switching our preview order just a little bit this week. We're in the middle of our preview series. Normally each week we do an opponent and then we do a position Tuesday, Thursday, respectively. But for some reason, Andy's like, I'm going to hang out with my wife on her birthday. So we've got our friend Andy from the the Kansas podcast on the 1012 network will be here with us on the Thursday show to help us preview the Jayhawks, because I guess he's going to make the wise choice and hang out with his wife for her birthday, whatever. No, it's fine. So we'll talk about the defensive line today, and then on Thursday we'll be back with another one of our opponent previews with the Kansas Jayhawks. But near and dear to my heart, Kyle skipped the offensive line because he hates me personally, but Daniel, friend of the show, DS Seahorn, helped us out. So Kyle's back for the other, my second favorite position group, the defensive line, who this is such a mixed conversation to have, right? Because Texas is losing a lot of the top end from last year's defense, but depending on who you ask, they may have a chance to improve, right? Keandre Coburn, Moro Ojomo, both heading off to NFL rosters. T. Sweat, though, decided to come back. You've got Alfred Collins, you've got Byron Murphy, you've got a really talented group coming back. And, you know, we talk about sometimes not all returning production is great. And sometimes, you know, Texas last year was just at a 14% stuff rate when you talk about the defensive line getting stopped at the point of attack. So, like, it was a good group. We can't throw shade at them. Part of the reason Texas was successful was a lot of the improvement in the trenches. But there are some things that they can improve on from last year. So I'm curious to see, you know, you've got NFL talent evaluators and execs already talking about, you know, Tavondre Sweat, and you've got Alfred Collins. They're already talking about these guys as potential draft picks and getting invites to the Combine and the Senior Bowl and all that. So I'm curious to see what this group looks like in comparison to a year ago.
You have two guys who leave to the NFL, and you just named three interior guys who are all NFL players, right? It's you know, if Alfred Collins can live up to his potential, has incredible, incredible upside. Tavondre Sweat just has the, you know, NFL ready body that you know you don't see. Like, teams love a guy that size who can do some things.
I believe they call that grown man.
Grown man indeed. He wasn't expected to play as a true freshman, and he did. It feels like he's been around for a while because he has. And at all times, he was just came in grown. And so he is a Sunday guy without a doubt. Byron Murphy is a guy who's been called undersized, but just you know, strong like a mountain in there. And I really think all three of those are NFL guys. You know, you could argue with Sweat's body size, maybe Collins has the most upside again at the next level if he lives up to it. But don't sleep on Byron Murphy. He may be my favorite out of the bunch. I just think the things he can do are pretty special. You said there was kind of a little bit of a you know, lower stuff rate, and that's fair. But they did get in the backfield. They were explosive all across the line, both interior and also we'll talk about the edge rushers in a moment. This defensive line unit, or you know, the full, I guess, Texas defense, led the nation in quarterback pressures. And we joked last year a few times, right, that meant that, you know, they just weren't getting sacks. They were getting back there more than anyone without converting those, because it wasn't like they also led the nation in sacks. So that will be the entire focus.
I think they may have been in the bottom 100 in sack conversion rate if you go look at that stat.
And that's a very fair stat, right? There were games like, we'll talk about this many times in our lead up.
UTSA a year ago, right?
Yes, yes. We will talk about this many times in our lead up to the season, but they were 18 points away from being perfect last year, right? Spread out across a couple games. It wasn't a great season, you know, because we expect more. It was a good season, but they were very close, 18 points and a couple, you know, crazy calls away from doing what we would love for them to do, which is win out the regular season, right? Not saying they should have. I'm just saying a couple more sacks in a couple of those games, and it's different, right? If Devondre Sweat's sack that should have been at least a safety in the Alabama game, right? All those things. But we know that this team, and Sweat is a great example, has, you know, the ability to collapse the pocket from the inside with some really strong interior players. Now, you have to replace the size of Snacks Coburn. At the end of the season, some of their success against the run came with a Sweat-Coburn duo with 950. Now, that may be a little exaggerated. 700 pounds, just, you know, clogging up the middle, and you won't have Coburn. Both Murphy and Collins have beefed up and are playing big, but you know, you just don't have another Snacks to put next to Sweat when you want to go super super duper Mojo Dojo giant in the middle. And so you know, I actually think this line has a chance to be better than last year's line. I'm not saying they will be,
yeah,
but I think the upside is pretty huge if the guys that where big recruits have had some flashes, turn it into production, you know, now that the opportunity is theirs.
Yeah, and I think part of the, like, the sack conversion rate, there's, like, nuance to that conversation, because Texas played so many scrambling or quarterbacks that are comfortable resetting the pocket, moving the pocket, or just tucking it and running. I mean, I mentioned UTSA jokingly, but like, that's what Frank Harris does, right? He's gonna, you pressure him, he's gonna tuck the ball, reset the pocket, try to throw it. Max Duggan, you think about the two different quarterbacks that played at Texas Tech. You think about all these guys are guys that like want to, that are comfortable pulling the ball down and reset. So part of that is like nuance of like just how the Big 12 and modern college football is, right? Like they got rid of dual threat rankings for high school recruits because every quarterback needs to be able to move his feet. So there's that nuance there, but I think you're absolutely right. You know, Texas has to do a better job of converting those into sacks and into pressures. There were a lot of times where, you know, and this is, we'll talk about this in when we talk about defensive backs, which you have to talk about when we talk about defensive line and edge rushers, like no amount of coverage can compensate for a 7 second or 8 second window to throw the ball. They're going to be open regardless, right? That's just how football works. And so being able to convert those things, and part of that is getting the quarterback comfortable, right? Or uncomfortable, like being able to set your feet for 8 seconds is way different than getting flushed from the pocket, having to reset, and then having a 2 second window to throw the ball. Those are two different things. But you know, when push comes to shove, they were not great. They were not a great sack team. They were better against the run, I think, than they were against the pass. I mentioned the stuff rate being low, but less than 3 line yards per rush, less than EPA per explosive run, which is great, right? Like second in the Big 12 in yards per rush. Like they were a good rush defending unit. And so I'm curious to see how that unit progresses. And again, losing a guy like Keandre Coburn, who had, let's just say it, like a massive level up. Like we were curious whether or not Keandre Coburn was going to even be a draftable prospect. And he turned into a really, really, I think he's going to be another Puna Ford type guy that got drafted relatively late for the billing coming out of high school. And turns out to make somebody look really good. Speaking of Puna Ford, had a pick six in camp today, right? What up, Puna, big man? We still love you. But so I think when we talk about the interior, like, there are two different jobs, especially the Texas defense. You got the interior guys, and their job really is to make the linebackers look good. When push comes to shove, you're in this defensive alignment, your nose, your three, their job is to free up the linebackers, right? Part of the reason why Jalen Ford and Demo had a good year last year is because Snacks and Ojomo did their jobs really well. And so when you shift that, and we talk about converting these sacks into, or converting these pressures into sacks, that gets on your edges, right? And I think I'm not concerned about the interior defense. I am very concerned about the interior offensive line. We talked about that last week. Go back and listen to it. But I am concerned about the edges, because there are so many questions. There's so many, like, Texas doesn't have, outside of Baron Sorrell's three air quotes multi-sack games, he had 1.5 sacks in three different games, right? So I guess that technically counts. But like, you have Sorrell, you have Jamon Tapp, who gold fronts movement, right? But like, is he going to be a guy? Ethan Burke is a high upside freak kind of guy. Justice Finkley, high upside freak kind of guy. But there's not necessarily anybody that's had any sort of proven threat to rush the passer. And that, I feel like, if you go back and listen to last year's edge preview, and you go back and listen to 2 years ago's edge preview, I'm saying the same thing over and over.
Yeah, and I remember last year saying, well, yeah, I guess. And also there's this guy, Baron Sorrell, they've said, you know, he's not high on the depth chart, but in camp he's looked good, and he ended up, you know, stepping in to be our best. So who knows? Maybe one of these names a little bit, you know, down the list here is the guy who steps up, right? There's three highly touted freshman, you know, ends who I don't know that any one of them is for sure going to play right away. Any of them or all of them could contribute. But Colton Vasek, who, like Ethan Burke, you know, come Austin area kid who was a big get. Little Akana, I called him. He's not necessarily little, but, you know, it's little brother. And then Billy Walton out of the Dallas area. Any one of those three could contribute, could have times when they're in, could have, you know, packages where they want multiple edge rushers and they get those guys in to just pin their ears back. They're obviously going to be a little bit behind where you have the guys who've been on campus, right? And I do think Ethan Burke has that upside. I really just, maybe I'm swayed by his mom, by his family, by the guy he is, but Justice Finkley is like, he's this year's like Roshan, you know, was last year. Just like, I'm rooting so much for this kid. I just like you as a human being. And so I'm just kind of secretly hoping that, you know, Finkley is the guy who steps up and is a major force on that opposite side from Sorrell. But, you know, not to spoil next week's preview, I do think the way, you know, we saw Overshown used as a, you know, a blitzer in different areas last year, I do think you're going to see Ant Hill, even as a true freshman. You know, he's going to be playing linebacker. We'll talk next week about what that looks like. But I think he's going to be a guy who gets down on the edge and you know, just goes after the quarterback quite a lot. I think Kwiatkowski's going to have some stuff dialed up for him to just go hit people hard. Don't want to quite call it Harold Perkins, but you know what I mean, is just a let him kind of run around and be that monster for the number one, you know, linebacker in the country this past year. But I mean, when you talk about the edge and you talk about the pass rush and you talk about the upside, I think it all starts with what you saw from Baron Sorrell, which again is coaching, right? That is a guy who's been developed, a guy who wasn't a huge recruit, you know, who didn't have all the eyes on him. You think about, you know, we talked a little bit in the interior, you know, the Vernon Broughton and Alfred Collins kind of upside, right? That they were huge recruits who there have been a lot of pressure and expectation on them since they've been here. Hasn't quite turned into the production that we were hoping. I'm still not ruling it out. I do think Broughton can contribute, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see all three of, when we talked about our interior guys, of Collins, Sweat, as well as Murphy out there, and maybe Collins plays, you know, something closer to an edge on that back. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw all three of them out there with Sorrell, and that was the you know, wasn't like they had to have that jack end on the opposite side in different sets, or you might have Ant Hill back there. So it'll be a little bit, I think, mix and match where they give different looks. There's different guys rotating in. We didn't talk about Trill Carter or big Sid Mitchell in the middle either, who may help spell a bit. You know, Carter has experience, so he's easy to kind of put in there. But Mitchell is huge and has a ton of upside. You don't go get – there wasn't a lot of defensive tackle just in that class value, but you don't go beat A&M and Georgia for a kid and not think he's got something, you know, just a matter of getting his body in shape. But, I mean, to me – this is a collective effort, right? If the interior guys are doing the thing, freeing up the linebackers, if the edge, if Sorrell can you know, get after the quarterback and one other guy, whether that's Burke, whether that's Finkley, whether it could be Tapp, right? I like, you know, I like what Tapp did in high school, you know, got that nasty in him. I don't know, but we didn't know, like Gerald said last year, and we had a Baron Sorrell kind of, a wild Baron Sorrell appeared, for my pokey heads. But you know, I'm curious if it means there's another guy on this list that, you know, we're not thinking of now that we'll say, oh, we're idiots, we should have seen that coming, at the end of the year, or if it really will be those four guys in some combination, each doing something a little bit different, but really being a collective unit in Sorrell, Collins, Sweat, Murphy, and that's your four kind of main guys. And you might have packages where you have three down linemen and a linebacker ready to blitz. You might have, you know, packages because you know they're going to have a lot of D-backs out there, where you really only have three. You may have three interior guys and one edge. You know, I'm curious how they're going to line up a little bit. If they stick with what PK does, then you'll have a buck end, a jack end, and two interior folks who are big, kind of, you know, people eaters in the middle, and they'll let the linebackers free. But it could be that with this personnel group, there's a little bit of a wrinkle on that. So I'm curious to see, as we said before, the Lions is what we're watching this year, offense and defense, all year, to see, you know, how high this team can go. I think on offense, we talked, Gerald and Daniel did it well, about, you know, everything there. I think on defense, they've beefed it up. They've changed it. We're seeing some of that this year being forced in there, with some of those new guys. But that, you know, getting ready for the SEC, that will be everything about this team. It's not just how many touchdowns viewers can throw. It's not how many, you know, interceptions our really good defensive backs can find. It's really going to be, can this defensive line set the edge? Can they set the kind of aggression at the point of contact at the line of scrimmage? Can they be a part of getting off the field on fourth down this year? Because it seemed like every time Texas had a heartbreaking fourth down, they just gave up the rest of the drive and the other team went and scored a touchdown. So can they stop that? Can they stop being one of the worst fourth down conversion teams, right? And you know, I'm not saying it's all on the line, but they are setting the line of scrimmage, right? They are getting in the quarterback's face and making him, you know, Sweat does a great job getting his hands up, right? Can they break up those short slants on fourth and three when you know they're just trying to get the ball out of the hands into, you know, receivers in the middle, and they're not trying to do much except just move the chains? Can you have other guys break passes up on a fourth down, get off the field? Can we have guys who collapse the pocket when they try to run for it, you know, or collapse the pocket when the quarterback tries to scramble? Can we have those things and get off the field? And a lot of it, to me, linebackers are huge there, but a lot of it, to me, starts with the defensive line.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago. Like, Anthony Hill is a guy that they've got to get on the field, because much like we said with Jordan Wigton, his freshman year, Anthony Hill's not going to be here for 4 years. So, like, get him on the field early, get him on the field often, have a package for him, get him on the field. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, Texas has the skill and the ability to win shootouts. I will say that. But I think Texas and Steve Sarkisian would rather not have to win shootouts each and every week, be able to have a defense that gives them a little bit of cushion, that they don't have to go out and score on every drive. I think that was part of the issue last year was, like you said, there were times where the defense wasn't able to get off the field. There's a positive corollary a negative corollary between giving up a fourth down and giving up a touchdown for Texas. And so every time that happened, the offense had to come back out. And so this is what we talk about. You've heard us talk about it ad nauseum if you've listened to us before, complementary football. And I think complementary football for Texas starts in the trenches. It starts with what the defensive line is going to be able to do. Daniel and I talked about it last week. It's not just on offense. The game is won and lost in the trenches. The game of football is won and lost in the trenches. And it's why I think Texas has been inconsistent for the last, I don't know, 13 years or so, because they haven't really had all that many dudes on both sides of the line. That's the first thing that Steve Sarkisian and his staff came in and addressed. And I think we're going to see the dividends of that on the defensive line this year. These guys are finally going to be redshirt sophomores and juniors. So you're finally getting to see them with a couple of full rounds. Because when you think back to like traditional college football and the way it works, you don't generally see a lot of successful underclassmen offensive and defensive linemen. It's just not the norm. Like, Kelvin Banks is the exception to the rule. So I think for Texas, getting these guys to their big boy bodies, getting them to this stage of the game, they're going to be able to turn the corner and really be able to get and hopefully create what Texas needs defensively, because the skill positions, air quotes, right, the linebackers, and especially the secondary, there's a ton of talent, a ton of lockdown guys back there. So if you can combine the skill of those you know, lockdown defensive backs, guys that can really patrol the back end, finally, with a group that's going to keep quarterbacks off balance, you could have a really special defense. And I'm not saying the defense last year wasn't good. It was a good defense, but I think there's talent enough, especially again, defensive line, for this to be a great defense in 2023.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, I see a world where if Alfred Collins or Vernon Broughton are on another team that we're playing and we're doing a preview, we're talking about this huge recruit that they had. This could be the year they break out, right? And those are the guys who, you know, may not be the two most talked about in the interior, right? Sweat and Murphy, I think, there. But they could be dudes on any other team. There's two redshirt freshmen, right? If we're doing a preview with Levi, he's going into the ninth guy in the depth chart. But just to go another level behind it, Jarae Bledsoe and Aaron Bryant were two guys who redshirted last year. Do either one of them, you know, have a chance to contribute? Talked about the three kind of edge freshmen that we had already. Do any of those guys, true freshmen or redshirt freshmen, have a chance to break in? Because I think really, like I said, Sorrell's a junior. I know that. Murphy's a junior. Sweat, Collins are seniors. I think Broughton is a redshirt junior. And Burke, who's presumably the starter, or Finkley, either of those are sophomores on the other side. So there's a good mix of guys who've been there a long time, guys who've been there a little bit of time, and you hope, you know, that year, that off season, or maybe it's a second off season, is enough with this group, with the coaching that they have, to take the step up. I'm curious to see if we have another breakout guy. I'm curious to see if our top end guys really are going to get themselves drafted this year by putting up the stats and putting it on tape. For you, Gerald, is there a player who is the most important of this group, or the one you're watching the most, or, you know, who's your one guy when we think defensive line next year for a successful Texas defense?
So my bias is going to show, because like my gut reaction is T Sweat, right? And you think about the way that when Texas defenses have been really, really good, they've had really dominant play from those inside guys. But the problem with wanting to watch the inside guys is that they never really show up on the stat sheet, right? If they're doing their job well, then the linebackers are the ones that blow up on the stat sheet. So there's like that, like looking at impact, I'm looking at a guy like T Sweat. I'm looking at, you know, a guy like Alfred Collins or Byron Murphy, or, you know, whoever that might be. Probably like one is T Sweat. But if you're looking at like production, I really think I've heard enough good stuff about Ethan Burke, and I've heard enough good like buzz about Ethan Burke. Texas needs a dude on the edge, right? When we think about the great Texas defenses, you think about Sergio Kindle, you think about Brian Arakpo, you think about Brian Robinson, you think about all of those guys who are dominant edge presences for Texas when the teams are really great. And so I don't know if that's a Sorrell. I don't know if Sorrell's going to have a level up from the level up, or if it's going to be Ethan Burke, or if it's going to be Justice Finley. But I think it's going to be one of those guys on the edge that really needs to be the guy for Texas.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I think Byron Murphy is the most important player on this defensive line. I think, you know, he flashed as a freshman. You said, ooh, this guy's different. He was, you know, probably a low four-star just because of his height.
And grown man coming in.
He had a mustache and a mortgage, you know, as an 18-year-old. But he played like a grown man. And as a freshman, flashed. Last year, you know, It was not. You said the linebackers did a lot of the sopping up and the you know, showing up on the stat sheet. So people might say, well, he wasn't as loud, didn't announce himself quite as loudly. And in fact, I think one of our good friends and former employer of this podcast, Westcott Eberts, wrote his preview in the spring and basically said that about Murphy. And I actually disagree. And I know they're not perfect, but Pro Football Focus seem to agree with me that Murphy is ranked number 8 for returning interior defensive linemen in the country this year. And that's based on his 83.9 run defense grade in 2022, which was top 10 amongst Power 5 interior D linemen, and 11th in the pass rush win rate at 14.8. Like, that's great. That's a guy who, if he's starting or if he's rotating out, like they may have 30 snaps, or whatever, you know, they're cycling to keep dudes fresh in the middle. That's a guy who's going to make an impact when he's in, right? And in the run, his ability, even though he's not, you know, the tallest dude who can just lean on you, his ability to get leverage and push and throw blockers off and then, you know, get a hand on a ball carrier, at least clog things up, if not outright make the tackle. And then his ability as a pass rusher, right? I do think Collins, you know, could blow the lid off this, but I think right now as it stands, our interior pass rush, Sweat is good. Collins has the potential to be unbelievable, but Murphy is the most like consistent. When he gets out there, his ability to just slip, wriggle, and push and make something happen in the pass game, he is our best. So if he takes that step up that it seems like some of the players, some of the coaches have been talking about this offseason, when we had DTD on the podcast and asked him about a player we should be watching for next year, the first name that he said was Murph Dog. Like it's Byron Murphy. I'm going to lean on my eyes and the players in the room as well, who seem to like a lot of what he has and think that he may be not just our most important piece on the line. He might end up being our most important piece on this defense. He could be the linchpin if he takes that step up and is able to do the things that, you know, he showed a flash of being ahead of the curve. If he's now in that meaty part of the bell curve and he's doing those things and he's at the point of his development, you know, where he should be as a junior, then man, I'm excited to see what kind of things he's got in store this year.
Push, wiggle, and shake, the lost Salt and Pepper song. But that's all we've got for you when we talk about the defensive line. We'll be back, obviously, next week, talk about the linebackers. We did a little tease, as they call it in the business, tease for next week. But we'll be back to talk linebackers, and we'll keep moving toward the season. That brings us part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus, and we down the 40. And the downing the 40 this week is going to feel like a rerun, and that's okay. But Texas made some stuff official, stuff we've already talked about before, but became officially official, starting with Texas officially signing former LSU commit, number 209 player in the country overall, Devin Pryor, officially inks with Texas. He reclassified from 2024 after decommitting from LSU and is hoping to join Rodney Terry's squad for the 23 season.
Get dudes in there, right? I like he's 6'7". This is a team that got bigger from last year, but still, you know, 6'7", who's really more of a small forward, not necessarily a big. I like what he can do. So we'll see if he's able to really push in that rotation as a hybrid guy who could probably play in the front court, but also could, you know, could play a little guard for you as well. So love it. We'll see how much he's able to contribute as that rotation really is, I think, finalized and certainly beefed up from where it was a couple months ago when people had mean things to say about Rodney Terry. great final piece to this class.
Like you said, this is like the player of the future when you think about like size and measurables, right? 6'7", 180, can move the ball a little bit, can handle the ball a little bit, can also play a little bit down to the post. Not necessarily a true big body big, but a guy who is able to add a little size for Texas, which is absolutely incredible. Another thing that we've talked about, dabbled with, but now officially official, we knew that David Pierce was reorganizing the staff and taking over as a pitching coach, but the staffing moves were officially official. Steve Rodriguez is going to handle the catchers, recruiting, short game, and base running. Phil Miller handling the infielders, hitters, recruiting, and the offensive game plan. Caleb Longley is going to be doing the outfield, hitters, and the recruiting coordinator. Those will all be your full-time assistants. Chris Gordon is going to continue to be your coordinator of hitting and pitching, while Carly Todd is shifting over to the director of operations, and Troy Tulowitzki coming back to be your director of player development.
And of course, like you said, Pierce, officially the handling the pitching duties. So it will be interesting. We talked about this a little bit as it was kind of understood or expected to be, and now we have official roles and responsibilities. As two people, Gerald, who thrive in the corporate world in making organizations work, R&R is very important. Give me a RACI, give me a matrix with roles and responsibilities. I like it. Lay it out. I might have thoughts about, you know, the CEO also being too in the weeds here, but we'll see. Pierce could prove us all wrong, and you know, the pitching could take off under him, which is again his passion. He was the pitching coach at Rice from 06 to 11 and handled the pitching duties both at Sam Houston State and Tulane. So this isn't necessarily new to our guy. Hoping this shakeup and bringing the too low of it all back into the fold is really what we needed to get back to. At least back to the College World Series, which again I was with my dad this weekend, and he brought up the Stanford play. I was like, I'm not ready. I'm still not ready to talk about it. Not ready yet still to talk about it. But nonetheless, hopefully this not only gets us there, but gets us all the way with a deep run in Omaha.
Yeah, I mean, again, David Pierce has been the head coach and pitching coach, not on the scale of Texas, but he's done it before. He's been able to juggle it. And I guess that's why, like, he wasn't able to find somebody he actually liked to do the job, because he knew and wanted it to be done in a very particular way. And you know, again, as somebody who does organizational development and organizational culture and efficiencies and all that as my day job, I do also have issues, like when the leader, the manager, can't develop somebody into someone that they want to be able to take over the mantle and do it for them. But, you know, maybe your Fortune 500s are a little different than running a college baseball team. We will see. Finally, we are 2 weeks, Kyle, 2 weeks out from our first fall competition. Soccer is going to, as they usually do, open up the 2023-2024 athletic calendar at home against the Island Aggies, Texas A&M Corpus Christi on August 12th. Same day, volleyball is going to have its orange and white game. No time announced for that, but the same day. So if you're in Austin and want like a little cheap afternoon, cheap evening of cheering on the Longhorns, catch the soccer opener and then go over to the orange and white game for the volleyball team.
Sounds like a wonderful day. I've been watching the Women's World Cup. I'm in the mood. I'm ready for some Texas women's soccer to get us started, and obviously for a volleyball title defense.
Always love it when Kyle is in the mood for soccer. That brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
So, you know, I've always liked Hudson Card. You and I have gone on the record as saying we thought Hudson handled what was not an easy situation with class, with grace, with humility, always kind of did the right thing, said the right things. Was he a perfect quarterback? No. And sometimes that's enough to make people say mean things on message boards and whatever. But a lifelong Texas fan who filled in when Ewers got hurt, but it wasn't his job. He also had some injury things. Battled it, you know, previously with Casey Thompson. Just had a tough stretch at Texas. And you know, as he transfers, if you recall, went in the transfer portal, ended up at Purdue, and I think is going to, you know, really have a chance to lead that team and be the guy, obviously, and you know, have a something to say in the Big Ten race. I don't know that Purdue is gonna scare Ohio State and Michigan, but he's gonna be a starting quarterback on a good Big Ten team and have some great memories made in his 1 year up there. But there's two different ways that you can handle that situation, and Card confirmed everything that Gerald and I kind of have said and have thought about him with his quotes at Big Ten Media Day. Basically, he said, my time at Texas was very unique, very memorable for me. I think it's ultimately going to make me a better person, a better player. I think if I didn't go through those times at Texas, I wouldn't be where I am today. Shout out to Coach Herman, Coach Sark. Seriously, they taught me so much. I wouldn't be where I am today without them as well. Wish them nothing but the best this year. A lot of my friends are obviously still on that team, so I keep in touch. Like, he's saying the right things, but I think he means it. I think he's rooting for Texas, right? Now, if Purdue and Texas somehow meet up in a bowl game or something, I doubt he's going to have a lot of Texas rooting that day. But I really do think he's a lifelong Longhorn and a guy who played here and, you know, loved being here. It comes through and it shows. And I'm not here to take shots at Casey Thompson or anyone else who's transferred out and maybe took little shots on their way out. You handle it how you see fit. But, you know, I know if I were in Card shoes, I would likely handle it the same way. Like, there's nothing gained by pettiness. The grace and humility honestly goes a long way. And I mean, it just makes me root for the kid even more, right? We spent a lot of, you know, minutes on this podcast covering Shane Buechele's time at SMU, and we still, you know, talk about him with the Chiefs. And you know, it's to me a Longhorn angle looking at that Super Bowl parade, right? Like, I'm excited for that guy. He's a Longhorn. And I feel the same way about Hudson Card. When Hudson Card goes on and hopefully has an NFL career, I'm going to root for him as a Longhorn because he was here, he contributed. And again, he went out for what was best for him, for his career, and he did it with dignity and grace. And I respect the heck out of the kid.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy, the way that he came in and played, he played hurt when Quinn Ewers was hurt, right? Like, and he's a guy who, much like, in the same reason why you and I respect Shane Buechele, the way that they wanted things to go at Texas, it didn't go that way. And especially a guy who was recruited, he was kind of the perfect Tom Herman quarterback, and things didn't work out for him. And I'll never forget him coming and just dragging it all over Judson in the playoffs and really getting excited about him coming to campus. But again, he's a guy that I will always cheer for. He is a lifetime Longhorn in my mind. Unlike some other guys who maybe transferred and trashed the program, that's fine. But I'm really a big fan of his, and we'll be cheering for him at Purdue and wherever he lands up. Again, he may be the next great Longhorn backup to win a Super Bowl. So I'm banging the drum this week on conference realignment. So the big news this week, at least as it stands when we're recording, is that Colorado couldn't stand with their own failure, and so they came crawling back to the Big 12. And so we're now at a point where conference realignment is like realigning to what it used to be. And, you know, I would be a big fan of like going back to the way things were in like 1998 or 2000, right? But that's not going to happen. But part of this conversation, there have been these corners of the internet, and it always happens, that are blaming Texas and the Longhorn Network for the current state of college football. And don't get me wrong. If there's one organization and group of fans that have an outsized sense of importance, it is University of Texas fans. But to blame conference realignment on a 10 to 12 years ago, hundreds of million dollar contract that ESPN decided to go in with Texas, who, by the way, ESPN is the straw that's stirring this whole drink, ESPN and Fox. So if you want to blame somebody, let's blame Mickey Mouse. But Texas is the big bad, and we get that. And you and I have, Kyle, have long said lean into being the big bad. But it seems a bit ridiculous to blame the University of Texas for saying, you feel like we're a big enough brand to support our own network, great, right? And the opportunities that it's garnered the university have been incredible. There's been more volleyball coverage, more softball coverage, more women's basketball coverage than we have ever seen. And so, as a University of Texas sports fan, and as somebody who's been following this and watching this and covering this since the first crazy round of realignment when the Pac-12 shot itself in the foot the first time, it's wild to me that this is the way that things are going. But again, the University of Texas is a convenient villain, a convenient scapegoat, and there's nothing really new under the sun.
Yeah, I mean, some of the takes, there's been revisionist history in college football is strong. Just ask, you know,
constantly.
Just ask Alabama and Texas A&M's claim national titles on the side of their stadium. That's right. I'm lumping you in there, Alabama. You also claim some ridiculous ones, but you have so many, no one really called you on it. But yes, revisionist history is ridiculous. And in fact, I've just seen a lot of people like touting, like, well, yeah, it's Texas's fault that, you know, the first they blew up the Southwest Conference, then they blew up the Big 12, and A&M only left because Texas did the Longhorn. And it's like, no, guys. Like, I don't even think Aggies really believe this. And shout out to Robert Behrens and some of the other like good Aggies who you know are like, that's just not true. We can be ridiculous, but let's not lie. Texas, you know, offered A&M a chance to have a joint network, and the Aggies turned it down. So there's the whole entire narrative that Aggie fans, to kind of justify their leaving for the SEC, was that, well, it was the Longhorns and the Longhorn network. It happened. I mean, it was a narrative crafted after the fact, which we've seen, you know, certain political news stations do the same thing the past few years. It's just like, can we just live in truth? That'd be nice if we did that. But yeah, so forget it. It's crazy. It probably started with, you know, when conferences, it's when the Big 12 started as a super conference, right? When people started amalgamating conferences into money-making regional things, right? If you want to go back to the old school or some other, you know, there was legal decisions in the 90s and 2000s. Like, there was things that happened before this. There have been things that happened since. But sure, if it's Texas's fault, we have broad shoulders. Everything is our fault.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer. Sorry, is that Twitter? That may be X. I don't know what we're calling it these days. I'm not probably long for that wretched website anymore, but we'll see. That's where you can find me, on X/Twitter.
I mean, I'm going to be on the website until – its inevitable heat death or the heat death of the sun, whichever happens first. But yeah, I'm on X. I still got the Twitter logo. As of this time of recording, haven't done the update yet. I don't have automatic updates turned on specifically, so I can hold on to the bird as long as possible. But you can find me on social media, basically anywhere. X / Twitter, Instagram. I don't go to my Instagram. It's all old. But Threads at GH Gooders. Follow the show on Twitter or X at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic. Choose an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back on Thursday with your Kansas preview, joined by our friends over at the Rock Chalk Talk Pod. And until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Let's go, big boys.
Push a big body. Can't stop you.